All right, perfect. I'm Carmen B. I'm a grateful ACA, and today I'm going to be sharing with you a little bit about my life and my story. I will first talk about my childhood and how that qualifies as a dysfunctional family. And then I'll talk a little bit about what my life was like before ACA, and then a little bit about doing the program and what my life is like now. And then I'm just going to take about two little gentleness breaks so that I can just kind of reset myself. So because ACA is a generational thing, I'm going to start going back in my family, and that was with my great-grandparents. My grandfather was a sharecropper in Moreland, Texas. He was very hardworking, but also very abusive and my grandmother often had to pick cotton because they just didn't have enough food. It was sharecropping because that's how it worked. And she did say that she would tell me that she absolutely hated it and wanted a different life. So when she was 14, she got married to somebody in the military, and they came out to California. What then was a very bustling African-American suburb, it was called Compton, California. And she would have six children. My mother would be the second youngest of the six. My grandmother liked to party. She liked nice things. So it was often kids raising kids. And that's just kind of how it was. My mother also married young. She was not 14, but she was 15 when she married, and she had three kids with someone who would pass away. And a few years later, she would meet my dad. My dad was a shoe salesman, but later on got involved with drugs in prison. I don't have any memories of him. And it was just something that we as a family didn't talk about. My mother ended up remarrying to someone that was physically abusive and violent, and they separated when I was 9 years old. And so I often divide my childhood into what my life was like before the age of 10 and then after the age of 10. So before the age of 10, I was pretty carefree. I played, I had a lot of close friends, I was outgoing. Stole from the local grocery store on the way home, things that, you know, kids do. And then after the age of 10, I was pretty withdrawn and silent. I like to hide in the background and kind of be unseen. And so what changed for me were two things that really dramatically changed the trajectory of my childhood and taught me a lot of ACA traits that I would take on with me to adulthood. And one is I would have an uncle that would attempt to molest me, and I would get away and tell my mom, and he left our house. But what I didn't know is he left our house to my grandmother's house. And my grandmother would tell me frequently that she didn't believe me, that I was a liar. And the only thing me and my mom talked about with this is that before I went to my grandmother's house, my mom said, "He's here and watch your back." So that was some pretty tough lessons I learned as a kid. And I learned that as a kid or as an adult, you are on your own and you have to take care of yourself. That no one will believe you, especially if you're a kid. And that to be very vigilant, to actually be even hyper-vigilant, especially if you're around men. So later that year, I would end up getting molested. But I didn't say anything because I had already learned that no one would believe me and I was on my own. I would get out of that because we would move to Arizona. And Arizona, I was 12, and Arizona I would describe as extremely chaotic. I had two siblings that were getting involved with gangs, and so it was everything that goes along with gangs. So cops going in and out, people going in and out, drugs, money under the mattress, all those different things. And for me, I thought my older siblings were like the coolest people on earth. Like nobody messed with them. They had money, they had things. And that continued until they both were shot. And then I learned another life lesson, which is that I didn't want that life for myself. And I didn't know what kind of life I wanted, but I knew that I did not want that life. So because of everything that was going on in Arizona, we would move back to California. And I was 14 then. And 14 to 18, I would describe as being very just overwhelmed. So I had a younger sister and three nephews, and they range in age from like 6 years old to 6 months. So most of the time we had enough. Sometimes we didn't, and I stole like baby food, or I stole food. And my mom during this period of time was working, and when she wasn't working, she was kind of in her room depressed. So I felt very kind of alone. I also learned another lesson, which is that others people's needs come first, and that my value is in my role as a caretaker to other people. In my family, anger was expressed through violence. So there were a lot of fights, physical, verbal, and I learned to equate anger with violence, and I became very uncomfortable with the feeling of anger because I just assumed that it was associated with some form of violence. We were not, both my immediate family and my extended family were not people that said, "I love you." I don't think I've ever heard one of my family members say, "I love you," to another person. It was just something that we didn't do. But I do remember my mother and my grandmother would often tell me, they would look at me and say, "You're disgusting." And as a kid, I thought that if your family said you were disgusting, then that's what you are. But I learned as an adult that that was just deflecting. That was just how they felt about themselves. But I also learned that a lesson that I don't have a lot of self-worth. And I would later work really hard to finish high school early, and I go on to college and grad school. And as soon as I got 17, I graduated high school, I moved all the way across the country. And I thought that just the having the distance between me and my family would cure everything. But of course I learned that life doesn't work that way, that I'm still taking myself with me. And all the trauma and all the hurts and everything that comes with me. So that was what my childhood was like, and how that's my qualifier for a dysfunctional family. And some of the things that I learned that affect my behavior as an adult. So I'm just gonna take a quick little gentleness break. In ACA, we have something called the laundry list, and it's a list of characteristics that you have as an adult that protected you as a kid, but that don't work for you as an adult. But we also have something called the reverse laundry list, which are the things that you can get from working the program, the benefits. And there are 14, so I'm not gonna share all 14, but I wanted to share four that have been very meaningful to me for my recovery and have given me a lot of hope. So one is that we will move out of isolation, and we are no longer unrealistically afraid of others. Two, we do not depend on others to tell us who we are. Three, we come out of denial about our traumatic childhoods and regain the ability to feel and express our feelings. And four, that we are whole and complete. So what was my life like before ACA? I was someone whose actions and decisions were guided by my childhood experiences and trauma, and it was really grounded in a lot of self-doubt and fear. So how that looked like for me was, one, I was a workaholic. I could work 60, 70 hours, weekends, and it became a vicious cycle because the more I worked, the more praise I got, and that's how I got some of my self-worth. And then the more I worked, and it was not good for me at all. And I was someone who never said no. So if you asked for something, my answer was always yes. And God forbid I say no, I would feel so guilty. I could feel guilty for like a whole week just by saying no to something relatively simple. I didn't have any boundaries. And in fact, I consider myself pretty educated, but if you asked me to define a boundary at that time, I wouldn't have been able to. There was no separation between between my family and me. What happened with them affected me, and vice versa. I also had very low self-esteem. So it was very hard for me to look in the mirror. And if I passed the mirror, I would look away because I just didn't like who I was. And in ACA, they say that we just don't have shame, but that we become shame and it becomes a part of who we are. So often looking in the mirror was also me kind of looking into my shame. So I just didn't look in the mirror. I was a people pleaser. And if I got any personal criticism, even if it was constructive, even if it was delivered in the most loving way, it would just almost devastate me. It would be really hard to receive. I had periods where I was very isolated and depressed, and I was very emotionally shut down. So I had pretty much two emotions, sad and sadder, and that was pretty much about it. I could also be a very harsh person. If you didn't meet my high standards of who I thought you should be, then I didn't think a lot of you. So I was very harsh to myself, but also to other people around me. So that was how my life was like before I joined ACA. And I felt that all of these coping mechanisms I learned as a child almost felt like they became a prison as an adult. I had all these behaviors that I did that I didn't understand. I didn't know where they came from, and I didn't know how to change. And so I felt very stuck and at times very hopeless. There were times when I didn't want to live, but I didn't want to die either. I was just, like I said, very apathetic and very hopeless. And so some of the things that I did to try to get some relief or to try to change was I was like a self-help guru. I read every self-help book I can get my hands on, and of course I tried it and it didn't work. I tried being ultra religious, so if I just pray and fast enough, then God would take it away and I'll be like this perfect person, but that didn't work. I tried therapy just by itself, and it helped, but it didn't work the way that I wanted it to work. And then I tried journaling and mindfulness and meditation and overeating, emotional eating to provide some relief, and none of that worked. So I just, like I said, I felt very, very hopeless and very stuck in these behaviors that were not good for me. So just another gentleness break. So there's a song that I really enjoy. It's called Joy. And it's also another song that I found a lot of meaning for throughout my journey in ACA. And what it's in a couple of lines from it, it says that there's beauty in my brokenness, bruised and sometimes battered down, radiant and alive, transformed and transfigured, broken yet beautiful. So that's a song that I have an attachment to. So how I came to ACA. There were two points in my life where I was introduced to ACA. One was in grad school with a therapist, and she would talk about things like the inner child and the loving parent, and I thought she was speaking Chinese. Like, I was like, I have no relation. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm just here because I'm depressed. What are you talking about? And so that didn't connect. And then 10 years later, I would go to an addiction conference. And in part of the conference, they had about 70 people in a room, and everyone that was a part of a 12-step program came to the center. And I looked and I saw people that looked like me, that talked like me, people who had read their publications, and I really kind of valued them. And so it gave me definitely a different perspective of 12-step programs. And when they went around the room, someone mentioned that they were involved with ACA, and someone asked them what ACA was, and they started talking about the inner child and the loving parent. And this time, it did really connect with me. So I feel like a seed was planted by my therapist like 10 years ago, and then I was ready to kind of receive that. So I knew at that moment ACA was where I needed to be. I didn't actually know what it was. I finished the conference on Sunday, and by Monday I was at my first meeting. So working the program. So for me, working the program was, in ACA they say attend 6 meetings in a row and both you and your life will change. So I interpreted that to mean that I only needed to attend 6 meetings and then my life would magically change. But 2 months later, I was back in ACA because that didn't work. I got a sponsor and I thought if I worked the steps absolutely perfectly and I worked them quickly, then at the end would be a rainbow and I'd be okay. If my sponsor gave me assignment, I did my assignment. If she said arrive at 6 o'clock, I was there by 6:55. I was just like ready to go. And I didn't get much from the steps. She was wise enough to tell me that type of model probably wouldn't work for me, but that they had another model of sponsorship in ACA called a fellow traveler. So I got a fellow traveler and that worked a lot better for me. It was basically me and I found another person working their steps again. So it was just us as equals, both ACAs, both trying to recover. And I think that provided the space for me to just take my time and really do the steps and feel my emotions and my feelings, to go fast on some parts, but then to stop and go a little bit slower in others. And so the second time around, I got a lot of benefit from doing the steps. In ACA, we have something called the Big Red Book, and they have a section on boundaries. And that was the first time that I really learned about what a boundary was. And that I could have boundaries, but I even had the right to boundaries. And I had the right to enforce boundaries if my boundaries were violated. So that was hard for me in the beginning, and it was hard for my family because that was different than the way that I had been interacting with them previously. So they heard no a lot more sometimes than they heard yes. And there was a portion in the yellow book where we called our family tree, and we kind of write down all of our family members, and we write down things about them. And to look at one page and see an addict here, an addict there, no father there, no father there, drugs here, molested here, codependent here, depressed here, anxious here. And it really helped me to understand the generational part, and that often that my family almost didn't have my mom didn't have a chance, that she kind of grew up into this dysfunction and that I didn't either. So that was very helpful for me to see. And probably one of those most helpful things was doing loving parent meditations. So that was really reconnecting with my inner children. So that 10-year-old that was violated, or that 12-year-old that was feeling the chaos, or that 14-year-old who was feeling very depressed. And I can reconnect with those areas, and that I can be the loving parent that they need. So I can reparent myself. So it's often freeing me and freeing my family. And allowing me the space to have the process to change. And that was really doing those frequently were really a game changer for me and helped me to really reconnect with myself and with my emotions. And then doing service, starting as being a timer in a meeting and then going on to do other things. I spent my life and I started ACA thinking that I had to fix myself. And what I have come to realize that it's not about trying to fix myself, but it's trying to accept myself and accept all of me and all those areas of brokenness. So the benefits that I have gotten from ACA, I call them just like little graces, these free gifts from God and from working my program that I got. And some of them seem very, very small, and some of them are very big. So like one that seemed very small to someone else, but that was very big for me, was the ability to look at myself in the mirror. So to walk by a mirror and not look away, and to not just look into a mirror, but like the person that I see. I also learned to say no, and it wasn't just saying no. I would more often, my initial response would be to say no. And the line that I have learned with my family is, I'm sorry, that doesn't work for me. So if they're like, can I borrow money? I'm like, no, I'm sorry, that doesn't work for me. That's like my go-to statement. And I learned much more emotions, not just kind of those negative emotions, But those positive emotions like joy and peace and all of those things. So now I have like 6 or 7 emotions and not just 2. I have a better work, definitely have a better work-life balance and not consumed by my family. And I now have very interdependent relationships, which I started to learn in ACA. So relationships where I'm getting and I'm giving, where I'm growing and the other person is growing. So that's been very helpful. And then I stopped trying to control or manipulate others. And so sometimes how that would present for me is I would say yes, I would help someone, and then I would expect something from them in return without actually telling them. And that's manipulative. And so I learned that type of, what that type of behavior is. And I've grown closer to God. So when I joined ACA, I was very reluctant because I thought, there was a part of me that thought whatever I needed, I should be able to get it from God. And there's a lot of reluctance with the program, but in fact, working the program, I've very much closer to God. And so that was kind of an unexpected benefit. And then I've also gained a greater appreciation for my family and for their struggles, and that they really did the best they could with what they had. And that now I have a program where I can break those generational things and move forward with the life that I want. So that is what my life looks like now. I would say that ACA was an integral part, but it wasn't the only part. So there was my faith, there was a therapist, there's a psychiatrist, there's ACA, and it's all of those things working together to help me change and grow and give me the life that I want. So that's a little bit about me. I wanted to end by doing a loving parent meditation that I have found so helpful for me. So if you're willing to do it, that's great. If you're uncomfortable with it or it's not something you would want to do, then by all means, I don't want you to do anything you don't want to do. But if you're willing, I just want us all just to take a couple of deep breaths in and out. And I'd like you to just tune into your body and relax your shoulders and your jaw and your face. And I'd like you to imagine that you're in a cozy house by the beach, listening to the waves going back and forth. And you picture yourself in a chair by a fireplace under a soft, warm blanket. And you take a moment to just feel the warmth of the fire and just the safety of the house. And on the other side of the room, a door opens and you see a child. And you recognize that that child is you. Your inner child walks towards you and you take in their eyes, their face, their hair, their heart, and you see that that inner child is precious and lovable just as they are, and that that child wants to be nurtured, accepted, seen, and most of all loved. And you realize that you can be that loving parent who protects them, takes care of them, makes sure they get to play and have fun. And just allow yourself to feel whatever warm feelings you feel flowing between you and your inner child. And just try to stay kind of as present in the moment as you can. And let them know that you will do your best to check in on them, to hear their feelings, to care for them. And just take a couple of more deep breaths in and out. And let the experience of the guided meditation settle in, just feeling the connection, however small and however fleeting, between you and your inner child. And then take a couple more deep breaths in and out. And then gently open your eyes, lift up your gaze, and then reconnect with your surroundings. So that's a meditation that I do a lot. and I found that ACA taught me, and I found a lot of healing and reconnection with that. So with that, that's my share, and thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Carmen. Another hand for Carmen. Thanks for everybody for showing up. It was very successful. Thanks for all the donations and participating in the raffle.